Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have someone who's made a big name for himself in the world of investments. Shoaib Grewal, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Shoaib is a partner at T-Ventures. He studied at Brown University, Stanford, Rhode Island School of Design as well. So Shoaib, tell me a little bit about your early life.
Sure.
You know, where did you study, some of the early jobs that you did before we get into your investment.
Sure. So most of my schooling, high school, happened in Delhi. A little bit of travel across different parts of India, but eventually ended up going to the Rhode Island School of Design to study, at first, architecture. I wanted to become an architect since a very, very young age. And whilst I had originally thought about going to college for that,
yeah.
Once I was at the Rhode Island School of Design, I realized that I didn't like the scale of architecture. I thought it was too removed. I thought the timelines and the gratification period was way too long for me. So I moved into industrial design or product design, where started doing a lot of different things, different projects, mostly around design and innovation, design and strategy, which led me to start my first startup in college with a few friends from Brown University.
Wow.
Though I was studying at Rhode Island School of Design, I was doing courses at Brown. We had the ability to move between colleges, which was quite nice. Got to know a few folks who were considering how to best apply their skill set to solving a part of the clean water problem in India, saying that, you know, there are many parts of urban India who do not have access to, actual potable clean drinking water. Started off as a summer project between my junior and senior year, my third and fourth year of college, where we all came down to Bombay. We had gotten some money from an MNC to start experimenting, doing some research. And eventually that ended up with us being in Dharavi, which at that point was the world's largest slum.
Yeah.
And
made famous by Anil Kapoor's movie.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's a very interesting place, very fascinating place. It just has a whole economy to itself, a lot to learn. But that eventually led to our first startup, which is called Waterwala, where essentially we were thinking about how to get affordable filtration devices to folks at the base of the pyramid in India. That eventually went on for a good 2 or 3 years. I graduated, spent a little bit of time working in New York, but finally came back to India to run the business over here on the ground. Left that after a couple of years of doing interesting things. That business expanded into different markets and areas, but I think my passion was to essentially come back to design in some way. And I started working with a couple of different organizations and companies that were either looking to come into India and localize their product to understand the Indian market better and sort of redesign their product to fit Indian needs. Or working with a lot of startups through accelerators and VC funds and working with their portfolio companies on product and design, which eventually led me down the investing path because I realized that, I enjoyed tying what I was doing in terms of working with companies on product and design and tying that to longer term outcomes as opposed to consulting, which is really about, let me come in, let me do some triage and then leave. So I said, what could happen if we marry both investment as well as helping founders with product and design, which was my first firm and my foray into investing.
Wonderful. And that is when you got, you know, interested in the investing world.
Yes.
And that's how T-Labs, the T-Venture started.
So first what happened was my own firm, Bold Ventures, which was this design plus investment. I actually merged that into the Indian arm of a U.S. Firm and accelerator called 500 Startups, as they were sort of thinking about doing more here. And then T-Ventures, I joined this team about 3 years ago. Again, great partners.
So tell me a little bit about T-Ventures.
Sure. So T-Ventures is the investment arm of Times Internet. Times Internet itself is the digital wing of Times of India Group. It's India's largest homegrown consumer technology company. At T-Ventures, we typically invest in seed, series A, real early stage internet technology businesses, mostly consumer businesses. And the idea is very simple. We have a lot of access to resources, knowledge, and a lot of distribution through Times & Pence platforms. And the thought is to invest in companies that that can leverage a lot of this, and invest in companies where this could be our sort of value add in their journey, and sort of help them supercharge beyond the capital.
Fantastic. So, you know, since you are giving money to startups, my first question, I'm going to focus a large part of our chat on the philosophy of investment.
Sure.
And because thousands of people watch us who are either startups or want to get into startups.
Sure.
So at what stage should a startup start to look for money?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I don't think there's any right answer for that. Mm-hmm. Typically what I like to suggest is when you're at a point where you have, well, let me sort of dial it back. Yeah. I think every startup, every good company starts with identifying a gap and sort of a very unique insight to a market. But to communicate your insight, you need to have something to show for it.
Correct.
If you are a fairly persuasive or accomplished entrepreneur, you can communicate that insight and the opportunity through just a pitch deck.
Correct.
And maybe that is the right time for you to raise. For those of us who are maybe going after far more meaty problems, something a little bit more complex, maybe you need to have a product in place. And for others, maybe it means even having a little bit of traction. So I think it really depends on what you need to communicate that unique insight and your solution to it. And I think that varies from company to company, but the common piece to that is, I think once you have the ability to put your money to work,
okay.
I think that's really what
that's,
it is.
That's very well said. So, you know, you will be getting so many business plans that you want to evaluate. What do you look for in a business plan?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, at the stages that in which we're investing, it comes down to a few real key things. And it sounds very simple, but it's a lot more complex in analyzing company.
Sure.
I think it really comes down to the entrepreneur and why they're very excited about the market and the opportunity.
Correct.
It's coupled with, again, coming back to my original answer, the question before this, that unique insight that they have.
Correct.
Of why this is either an underserved market, an unmet need, or where there's high levels of, or sort of very low customer satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get too fixated on the product as I'm sort of seeing it at that stage.
Okay.
Because I really believe that all of these products evolve over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not really married to the product. I really want to get excited by the market. I want to get excited by the opportunity. I want it to be an idea that I can say to myself, man, if I wasn't investing, I'd probably be building this as well.
Oh, okay.
So that's one sort of qualitative way.
That's a very, very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard this from so many people I've spoken to.
Oh, yeah?
I love this perspective that, you know, most people say that I don't want to regret not having invested.
Sure.
But I love your perspective that this is something I may want to have been doing myself.
Well, because it's a journey, really. Yes. I think, you know, with all of these companies, we're spending six, seven. I mean, I've the first few companies that I've invested in, I've been an investor now for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've had Matt Chithranjan on the show.
Yeah.
I was an early investor in Futukai Coffee.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just constantly part of that journey. And it's something you also don't want to get bored.
Right? I agree. Yeah. Very well said. So, you know, and my next question to you is that, you know, what are some of the key challenges that a lot of the entrepreneurs who you have interacted with, and this is in your opinion, what kind of challenges do they face?
Well, a host of challenges, really. I think capital is still a challenge. Access to capital across stages, whilst the number of investors are only increasing every year and the amount of capital deployed is only increasing every year, I think that the number of companies are also increasing, and it's not able to sort of meet that demand, really. So I think capital continues to be a challenge, though it is getting sorted out. I think building the right team tends to be the most challenging thing for anyone at the early stage. Finding people who are as committed, who are willing to take that jump, and actually get involved in the startup and sort of move away from corporate life or move away from whatever else they're doing. I think that continues to be a challenge. Besides sort of typical sort of business challenge. But I think it really falls into these two major categories at early stages.
So, you know, one of the big fears a lot of investee companies have is the amount of interference, if I can use a strong word, an angel investor may have.
Sure, sure.
What is your thought on the degree of attention you will give to governance and the scope if you become an investor?
Sure. I think governance is definitely very important. But I think that there's a difference between governance and trying to maybe be like a puppet master to a company.
Correct.
I think that a lot of angels and investors can be overbearing. And I think you need to separate that from actual good governance of the business. I think as a board member, as someone who's trying to keep the business on track, there are certain questions that it's your responsibility to ask those questions. Your fiduciary Absolutely. Responsibility to constantly ask the founder those questions. But I don't really like the idea of parachuting in and running someone's business. That's not my job. My job was to find an interesting founder and augment them, really.
Correct.
And sort of help them out with whatever they need help with. And I think that can be done separate of the governance question.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Because governance is a very, very big issue.
Yes.
And, you know, you just cannot not meet your fiduciary responsibility.
Yes. And I think more founders are realizing that as well. And the savvy founders are realizing that it's a very important part of them actually also raising money in further rounds.
Yeah.
It's just having everything in order.
Correct.
Yeah, correct.
So tell me, you know, if you look at the statistics of startups, numbers keep varying, but between, you know, say 6 to 9 startups don't make it.
Sure.
What do you think are the reasons for startups not being able to cross that so-called threshold?
Sure, I think for many of them, it's not finding the right business model to sustain the business, yet at the same time grow at a rate which they need to grow to become very large. So I think that's one sort of fundamental issue, is this sort of business model discovery, because you know many startups are really audacious ideas. They're things that haven't been tried and tested. And where the initial monetization, you won't really understand where monetization may come from. You may not understand the most effective way to acquire customers. I think that's why a lot of interesting companies may not survive. Additionally, I think timing is a big piece. You have a lot of ideas that were way too ahead of its time. Right. Now, there's this wonderful story that I love to come back to of how Kodak had actually invented the digital camera in the 70s, I think, right? Or maybe it was the 80s.
Yeah.
But they had no way of actually manufacturing at scale, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have all of these moments in history where there have been inventions that have sort of come out either earlier than they should have. And I think that that tends to be a problem as well, where you may have a great idea, but market acceptance is a definite issue. I also think that a lot of companies die because of overspending, spending too much money, whilst not actually caring about those fundamentals that I brought up in point one. So I think there's a difference between this business model may never exist, and I have not cared enough about the fundamentals. So I think that those are two different things.
Very interesting. So, you know, a question that I often ask a lot of my guests who are gurus like you in the startup world is that, you know, I get conflicting views that should an entrepreneur go solo or should an entrepreneur have a co-founder or a set of co-founders?
Sure.
What are your views?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think solo founders can make it work, but I think that the journey of an entrepreneur is often very lonely, and having co-founders is helpful in that regard. I think also in the earliest of days, having co-founders with complementary skills can save you the time and effort of having to hire expensive team members. And it sort of helps balance you out. And at the same time, I think that it is someone, I think the idea evolves as there are more minds around it. And more minds who have incentives aligned in the same way. You know, investors have slightly different incentives in certain cases than the company. So I think solo founders can make it, but you have an edge if you have co-founders.
Yeah. And you think that co-founders should generally be complementary skills?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So, you know, moving on, I've generally again seen that there is a lot of pressure from investors to scale up. And this term pan-India seems to be, you know, aspirationally very important.
Sure.
But I've often wondered that, you know, in a city like Gurgaon, which has got 3 million people, and in the national capital region, you've got 24 million people, which is almost as big as Australia.
Sure.
So what is this incredibly crazy kind of race to say, I want to be pan-India?
Sure.
My question to you is, at what stage do you think a startup should start scaling up?
Sure. I think it really depends on what kind of business that you're running. If you are a SMB SaaS business, for example, you may need to be pan-India because your customer base might be very distributed. But over increasingly, I'm liking this idea of I think a lot of people in the industry are calling it micro-scaling.
Correct.
Where it's just, let's focus on this one market and let's sort of see this out. Because to your point, markets like Delhi, 16, 17 million people, that's the size of that's a fairly mature market,
yeah.
Depending on if you have the right kind of product and if there's enough people that customer set in the customer base to buy your product. And mm-hmm. Case in point is a company we invested in called Shuttle, which is office to home commute, planned commute on a bus. They spent the majority of their time in the first few years just focusing on Delhi NCR,
yeah.
Getting the playbook right,
mm-hmm.
and then expanding to other markets. Mm-hmm. So much so that other markets became exponentially easier for them.
Correct.
And I mean, factors of years almost, mm-hmm. For them to get into another market and expand and scale and grow over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that with a lot of companies in India, folks are learning that it makes a lot of sense to really think about scaling in your home market first, getting things right before really necessarily going to India.
Okay. Okay. I'm not sure if you can share the failures that you may have had with investors, but if you can, without giving names,
sure.
Maybe some examples just for our viewers and listeners.
Failures.
Failure in the sense where an investment hasn't gone right.
Yeah. Oh man, there's so many of them. Like as you said, mm-hmm. right? I think only 10-15% of your companies really, really do well.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of giving specifics, I can perhaps talk about certain reasons why
Correct.
Some of these companies
Absolutely.
Failed. Mm-hmm. And we touched upon some of this earlier as well. I think, and more often than not, they were companies where the product was very interesting, but they couldn't figure out the most effective customer acquisition strategies.
Okay.
They couldn't figure out the best way to get in front of their customer and to do it in a cost-efficient manner.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more companies struggle, especially in India, because of that than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sort of one sort of reason. Another, I think, is a founder's ability to convince follow-on and downstream investors to actually invest in the business. I think fundraising itself is a major skill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a skill which is, for the most part, I'd say highly underrated in the journey. It's unfortunate that you have to spend quite a bit of time actually fundraising. It is a bit of a full-time job, but I've seen a lot of interesting companies not be able to tell their story in a way that can be appealing to people beyond their existing set of investors, their team, and their customers. So I think that being able to tell the right story, and I don't mean make things up, but I think storytelling itself is a bit of a skill, particularly in fundraising. I think that's hurt a lot of interesting companies.
Got it.
And I think just not having a clear understanding of your cash flows. I mean, it's a very, very fundamental thing.
That is
but you can go through large fundraising cycles, and then eventually realize that your costs are catching up to you, and next thing you know, you have only a month's worth of runway. And then what do you do in those circumstances?
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are a few of the reasons why I've seen.
Actually, I've known several startups who don't raise money in time.
Yeah.
And then they run out of cash.
Yeah. Fundraising takes time.
Yeah.
And I think each fundraising round, for the most part, on average, takes the same amount of time. Of course, you have to have different proof points. But in India, you're looking at anywhere between 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And 3 months at the fastest.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yes.
Yeah. I agree. So Shoaib, let me move to a few questions for you personally.
Sure.
You know, over the years, and you know, you're very young, but you've got some amazing experience. My question to you is that, have you had any people who've had an influence on you?
Sure.
And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Well, that's definitely quite a few people. But one person who had a profound, say influence on me and my thought process was a professor of mine at RISD, my name is Charlie Cannon. He was a very enigmatic person on campus. you know, he was constantly doing very interesting projects outside. You know, I think he had some crazy clients, Apple and American Express, but also governments, and he used to get flown into different places to do interesting strategic innovation projects. So I think he had a couple of different influences on me. First thing was he helped me sort of see that what I was doing with my design education was more than just designing physical products, but it was really creative problem solving.
Correct.
And that as a designer, you don't have to limit yourself to, you know, just the design of physical everyday objects, but you can think bigger and you can think larger than what that would mean. Of course, you have to prove yourself far more than an engineer would in the business world or anything else, but you have a certain tool set that can apply really well to different things. So I think that's one thing that he helped me with.
Okay.
The second thing, and this is a direct conversation that I had with him. I went to him one day, he was a bit of a mentor to me. He said, Charlie, I'm really restless. I don't know if I want to, you know, continue running my own business, but some part of me wants to go join an interesting company. I'm thinking about joining this firm, et cetera, et cetera. How do I choose? How do I choose what to do in life? Mm-hmm. And he said two things. One is that, you know, we forget how long our professional lives technically can be. And, you know, in many cases, it's, you know, we're constantly thinking in 2-3 year terms, but our professional lives can be 40, 50 years. And in that period of time, if you're good about it, you can do a little bit of everything, really. You can be an entrepreneur, you can be an investor, you can be a consultant, you can have passion projects. And then secondly, when I asked him, well, how do you figure out how to move from one thing to the other?
Sure.
I found this to be the most profound. He said that, you know, life is kind of about riding waves. You know, when you're out in the water, out at sea, and you're trying to get to shore. And it's about identifying which wave that you need to ride to get to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And that's something that has really stuck with me since then is, you know, whenever I think about an opportunity or what to do next, it's all about figuring out that next wave.
Fantastic. Fantastic. That's really well said. So my next question to you is that, what would be three words that define Shoaib?
Oh, three words. That's tough. Ooh. Three words I would use?
For yourself.
Sure. I'd say curious.
Yeah.
Hungry. Mm-hmm. And I have to think of a third word. Sorry, I've never had this opportunity to reflect this one. persistent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. All three very, very good words. So my next question to you is that when was the last time you did something for the first time?
Oh, wow. I think it's been a while. I saw this in your questions that you had sent. The last time I did something for the first time, about 2 years ago, I had the privilege to go to Iceland.
Okay.
So unfortunately, it's been a very long time since I've done something new. Mm-hmm. But that's the first time that actually got to, it was essentially riding ATVs in the outdoors. Yeah. And, you know, living in a city like Delhi, you're constrained, really. But it was the most liberating of feelings in sub-zero temperature, riding ATVs through, you know, the backwoods of Iceland. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the last time I had never done that before. And it was exhilarating.
It's quite an amazing experience. I did that many years ago in Switzerland.
Yeah.
It was quite fascinating.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I think, you know, my friends not convinced me. It's not something I would have considered doing, really. But I'm glad that I did. It was one of those few experiences that consumes you both mentally and physically.
Right.
And you come out very relaxed at the end of it, surprisingly.
Yeah, I agree. So sure, we've got two more questions
for you.
One question is on failure. Hmm. You know, and I've said this many times that most of us who are Indians or Asians don't teach our children that it's okay to fail.
Sure.
You know, and it manifests itself in our behavior, in traffic lights and aircrafts and whatever. Everyone wants to be first time.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet we fail all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and we learn. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from your failures or your mistakes?
Sure. I think one is that once you've had a consistent number of failures, you realize that you have the ability to get up every single time.
Get it.
And sort of we underestimate our own resilience as human beings to get up and go do it again.
Yeah.
The second thing that I've learned from my failures is that that there's a very interesting thing about stress, you know, failures and stress. I feel like, you know, when something is about to fail, it's a stressful experience. I think that our ability to cope with stress only increases with failures, because the scale of things begin to change.
Yeah.
I've also realized that there is no reason to ever be ashamed of your failures.
Okay.
It is tough, and of course, you know, we live in the entrepreneurial space at least. People say that, it's okay to fail, but at the same time, it is still a bit stigmatized. It is stigmatized in India as well. But I think being able to, it's okay not to be ashamed. Mm-hmm. So long as you've had the opportunity to reflect on why those failures happen, and you're able to channel that and turn that into learnings, really.
Very good. And my last question, I come back to startups, and
sure.
This is for all the people who are going to be watching us and going to be listening to us.
Sure.
Who have the little starry dream of having a startup. What would your advice be to a young individual who wants to become a startup entrepreneur?
My advice would be to be obsessed with the customer and the user that you're serving. Mm-hmm. Listen to them. Respond to their needs, but do not be afraid to push back.
Okay.
And sort of share your vision for what you think that they actually require or need.
Okay.
Build fast, test, and don't hesitate to jump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So Shoaib, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.